Hello everyone and welcome to edition 327 of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast and our fifth World Cup special of sorts. Anyway, on the way, the final word on Russia, Putin's not for sharing, and the crossover is here. Part two, all about Norwich City and the pre-season latest, where we'll hopefully be joined by Paddy Davitt live from somewhere in Germany. And that is the sound of my fingers being crossed. My name is Michael Bailey. Joining us here back in sunny, rainless Norwich this Monday morning-ish from Archant Towers, we have a Norwich City correspondent, David Freezer.
Hello.
And Deputy Head of Sport here in Norfolk, Mark Armstrong.
Hello there.
Gentlemen, how are we both? Pad will get on the phone. Dave, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Had a nice weekend in London enjoying the end of the World Cup. Well, not so much England's game, but enjoyed the final.
It did take place, the game, didn't it?
I vaguely remember it, yeah, but I don't remember really paying much attention to it because it just felt like a pre-season friendly.
Did you, was it a politically motivated weekend? Go and see a bit of Don?
No, I wasn't there in time for that. I just missed that. I would have happily joined in though, but I wasn't there on Friday.
You've only stood in front of you. That's what we learned this weekend. Mark, how are you? Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, good weekend, thank you. Just a bit depressed that the World Cup's now over. I don't feel quite ready for club football yet after all the fun of over in Russia, but yeah, club football's got to take priority now, hasn't it?
It has indeed. Where was the summer? Where did that go? Was that beforehand? Anyway, right, so before we get stuck into the proper stuff, remember you can get in touch with us all here to share your thoughts and set the agenda. Just send us an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk or get in touch via all the possible social media channels you can imagine, be it the Pinken or, of course, our own personal profiles. And make sure you don't miss a single podcast this summer and through next season by subscribing. All the details and links you need are at pinken.com/podcast. So let's start with the World Cup chat, shall we? England finished fourth. That's the exciting news. We'll talk about the winners in a bit. Who watched the game on Saturday? I sort of had it on. Yeah, Mark's got his hand up.
I fell asleep, actually, in the first half a little bit. Yeah, it's hot, wasn't it?
God, I mean, I was doing other stuff and it was on. But the sort of game we expected, and let's be honest, it probably was a decent reality check, actually.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, Belgium... I think Southgate admitted as much afterwards that they're a better side, got better individuals than England, and they played as such. Yeah, I mean, England exceeded expectations, and it looked like a game too far. I was surprised at a few of the players that played, to be honest, like people like Kane, Sterling. I thought he might take them out. I think Harry Kane's a funny one for me because he looks so bright in the group stage, and you obviously have to take into account the opposition against, and then. After Colombia, he just seemed to tail off, and it was speculated that he had an injury, and he insists that he didn't, and you'd have to say it, because Southgate wouldn't have played him if he was carrying on. And I just wonder how set up he is and other players are for tournament football, where you have a lot of games in a short space of time, and they're very intense games, and he just looked a bit off it for me.
I thought he looked shot, knackered, and I got told off by someone at the Railway Tavern in Durham for saying he was awful against Croatia, which was probably harsh, but he was very quiet. Brilliant save in the end from Subasic for his chance that was just a couple of yards out, because we've seen the replays now. Brilliant save, and obviously that goal would have made all the difference, but he just looked tired. Dele Alli, I mean, you say that Savko wouldn't have played Kane if he'd been injured. To me, I thought he played Dele Alli most of the time when he was injured during the tournament. And it's hard, I guess, because England had a pretty settled side, didn't they, Dave? And they didn't really mix it up because they wanted to keep that consistency. But with that, you know, comes a bit of drain. Something that Croatia managed okay, I guess.
Well, when you're tired and you just want to go home, the last thing you really want to see is Eden Hazard running at you or Kevin De Bruyne not far behind him, setting him up. I mean, that Jordan Pickford save that denied, I can't think who it was.
Was it Mounier
the shot? I mean, that would have been an absolutely sensational goal. The speed they broke out. England didn't have that in their locker on Saturday. They were tired. I think Kane has been playing within himself almost on purpose. I think he knows he's tired. I think he knows he's not at full capacity, and he's almost been playing a bit more of a unselfish role, bringing fouls onto him and trying to hold the ball up. It's not, you know, that a chance in the first half when, was it Sterling, teed him up on the edge of the box and he just snatched it. You know, it peak Harry Kane, that goes in the back, at least goes on target, doesn't it? And he actually put it wide. So, yeah, I kind of lost interest in it all at the end. I think as much as the players did when you see Phil Jones getting destroyed by Hazard, that's basically what you would have expected if he would have been playing earlier.
It's been a great campaign, though, let's be honest. It's been... What a great journey, and Pete, you know, it's a bit cliche, but people have fallen back in love with England, because I felt a bit disenfranchised with it recently, and you just thought, well, you know what to expect, a bunch of cognitive footballers coming together and not performing to their abilities, but that's just not been the case this time, and you really get the sense they're a really good bunch of 20 something lads having a great time out there. That, and they've just taken the pressure off themselves. The difficulty now is that the pressure's going to be back on.
I think that we're already starting to look forward, aren't we? And you're right, the expectation now, the next time they play, everyone has fallen back in love with them, so it's all going to come with the usual demands of, right, off you go, let's see what you've got. And there will be that going forward. And I guess that's the crucial thing, isn't it, between now and the Euros, which will be here, there and everywhere across Europe, but the final and the semi-final, of course, are at Wembley. Is that how much of this was a seizing of an opportunity and then ultimately a missed opportunity in terms of their progress and all the teams that failed to get so far, compared to a real step up in terms of what England could deliver going forward, because they're a young side with plenty of room to develop?
Well, you have to take into account that the teams that they played, and you know, a late winner against Tunisia, Panama were barely League Two standard. They lost to Belgium. They've actually now lost three of their last five. So, you know, bad start to Euros and all of a sudden things look very different, don't they? But it was just the pressure release, I think. If you look beyond that sort of hard and fast fact of it all, it was just to win a penalty shootout and to win a quarterfinal so smoothly and stuff. It just released a lot of built-up pressure. And, you know, we haven't been done over by a terrible penalty decision or an awful red card. There's not been any controversy, and that's kind of... You've seen that, by the way, it's sort of ebbed away. There hasn't been a lot of anger around. So I think people are just encouraged for the future, and also by the fact that there is so much success in the youth levels coming through, you know, winning the Under-20 World Cup. And, you know, you've got that lad at Dortmund, Jadon Sancho, who looks like he could be a real exciting player in the future, and Phil Foden at Man City. There's loads of potential big hitters coming through the system, and Kieran Trippier, you know, has emerged as potentially one of the best right-sided players in the world as things stand. One thing that I did think during the game was when we looked good at times in the first half, we've lost his cheek in central midfield. I just wondered whether maybe they should have used him more, perhaps even against Croatia, and would Lingard have been better where Sterling was playing? Because, you know, Sterling, okay, he has been overly criticised at times, but equally he hasn't been brilliant. He, you know, his running and stuff has been good and has stretched teams, but he hasn't scored goals and he hasn't created assists. Would Lingard, who's looked quite lively throughout, have been better that bit further forward with Loftus-Cheek to give a bit more solidity in midfield? Because against Croatia, when you've got Rakitic and Modric against Jordan Henderson, inevitably that's where they won the game.
That creativity in midfield, I think, will be a point that will come up between now and the Euros. Obviously, a nice little space there for a certain Leicester number 23, wow. Assuming that is his squad number. Maybe he's got a chance in the Premier League to prove himself. The sort of player England missed, did you think?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the opportunity is there for him, isn't it? And I think he's the sort of character who will see that as well, and he will back himself to play his way into that. But yeah, I mean, England do lack a bit of creativity, and I think Southgate knew that and set his side up as such with Lingard and Ali sort of ahead of Henderson, and hoping that the runners would compensate for that, which they did against poor opposition. But once you come up against the bigger teams, they hold on to possession much better, and England paid the price for it. I just hope that someone like Loftus-Cheek goes away now and thinks, you know, I'm so close to getting into the England starting 11, and I hope that he either gets a chance at Chelsea or says, you know what, I'm out on loan again, and I'll get a season of Premier League football again, because that's the only way these players are going to develop. And you know, the same can be said for a lot. I mean, I had a conversation with someone else this morning that, you know, Liverpool's midfield looks quite heavy now, and whether Henderson will get in, it's important that these players do keep playing regularly, otherwise we're never going to make that next step.
And then also in terms of over the next 2 years that Southgate is open to players who are in form being involved and not going, right, this is my group, regardless of whether they all kick on or they don't, I'm going to stick to it, needs to be open in terms of players playing regularly, showing that they've got form and not just being selected because they're part of Southgate's group. We'll see how things develop over the next 2 years. How exciting. We did, of course, have a final as well. The right side won it, didn't they? I mean, in terms of France, they always seem to have the gears to go on and take people apart when they needed to, which ultimately they did.
They did. I mean, Croatia played the better football over the course of the game, and had things fallen for them, then it might have been a bit different. But, you know, in reality, they were handed an incredibly simple goal by a bizarre mistake from Hugo Lloris, who obviously thought the game was won by that point. But yeah, I mean, to see Mbappe play so well, and Pogba, you know, he can just take any game by the scruff of the neck and win it if he decides he wants to. And I hadn't noticed in real time, only saw it in the replay, his pass to set Mbappe away on the move, which eventually he finished. I mean, that was sensational. A left-footed volley banging to the right channel. That was pretty special. I think France had the gears to move through if they needed to beat anyone. If they were devastating at times. So I really don't think England would have beaten them in the final if they had have got there.
Not a chance. A wonderful balance to the side in terms of the protection as well.
It's out, but I must admit, I thought the game hinged on that penalty incident just before half-time, because I thought Croatia had them. I really did. They were... quite fortunate free kick that they were giving France to go ahead. Obviously Mandzukic nodding it into his own net, and then Croatia were much the better side. Great goal from Perisic, and then that, I mean, it's a really difficult one to give. I didn't envy the referee at all in that situation with VAR, but I don't think the referee did himself any favours in the way he looked at the pitch as well, in that he looked so uncertain himself, which, if he's that uncertain, stick with the decision that he made in the first place.
I think that a lot of this is the teething troubles of VAR, just in terms of how the officials use it, because it's almost like when something comes up as a review, they're like, well, I better give it. And it's, oh, this must be something that I should be giving. And they're almost second-guessing themselves because it's so new. I like to think in a few years' time, once they're used to it, they'll have the assurance and security to go, nah, I'm happy with what I said, thanks. Not, oh, it's come up as a review, I better make the changes. Ultimately, though, whether you didn't think it was a penalty or think it was, that's a referee's call issue, not an issue because we've got VAR, as far as I'm concerned. Brilliant. Oh, I thought VAR, absolute success. I think it vindicated all the things I thought about VAR before it came out, which is we're still going to have loads of controversy because you've still got the subjective nature of a lot of decisions. We had, what, one red card in the whole tournament, which is basically unheard of. I think that's right. And not a single incident, well, that was captured, of violent play. I mean, in terms of the way and the spirit the tournament took place in, was brilliant. It made it a joy to watch, and I think it helped enhance it.
I think it has improved the behaviour quite a bit of the players, and it has taken a bit away from the sort of crowding around of the referee and stuff, because there is a little bit the players can just think, oh, hang on, we've got VAR here, don't necessarily need to go and charge at the referee. I know that did happen a few times because, you know, aggression gets the better of people at times, but I mean, instinctively I thought it was a penalty looking at the replay, but by the letter of the law I don't think it is, because it's got to be deliberate, isn't it? But you know, the hand came out at a funny position, it stopped the ball going towards goal. I think it's definitely a debatable one anyway, but yeah, I mean, I don't like this whole thing with the referees going over to look at the TV. I think it should be like rugby, where you go to your TMO, you listen to what they say. You know, you could almost, there's been a few occasions in this World Cup, I don't know why I'm putting my finger to my ear.
If only we were on video, that would be
I was illustrating my point. you have penalty tries in rugby, don't you? And there's been a few occasions. Was it the Sweden game where Martin Olsen went through, and there was another game as well where they were cleaned through on goal, and then they were cleaned out. And a TMO in rugby could give a penalty try in that situation. But anyway, my point being that in rugby, they just listen to the TMO. They make the decisions because they've got the screens in front of them. They have as much power as the referee has. There's no need for this sort of worship of the referee as the key decision maker. They say, no, yeah, that is a try, mate. He's got the ball down. No problems. And you're done.
And a lot of that came up early in the discussions in the tournament about it being a refereeing team. And I think that's exactly the point. They're still saying, right, ref, you make the decision, whereas they don't have to. Like, they're all in their own, they're all in full kit, Let them make a decision.
And the pressure, like when I was watching it with my mates during the final, it was like there's hundreds of millions of people watching that guy, and the every second that ticks by as he looks at that screen, he's thinking, "Oh my word, what am I going to do here?"
And he felt it, didn't he? You could tell he felt it because he obviously looked at it, made his decision, went away, and he thought, "No, actually, I better go and have another look." And that was so bad to do. Like he obviously was uncertain. You just shouldn't do that. Go and have a look at it a few times, come back, make a decision.
I'd like to think that they're in dialogue. I hope that it's not like they're just discussing it, it's all quiet, and then they're like, right, the replay's up, go and have a look. He needs to be in discussion with them, because then it's a team. It's definitely a team effort.
You're pressing your ears as well.
I did do that. I did do right. It's a natural reaction.
You're left out now. Hang on.
What's it saying? Oh, no, don't worry. The thing that got me as well, I think he gave a goal kick, didn't he? Did he give a goal kick? So the point was, if it wasn't a penalty, then it was a corner. Yeah. Would he have still been allowed to then give a corner? That was my issue. But
yeah, because you can't give handball. You can't handball the ball out for a corner. But I suppose it's not handball, but it hit his hand. So
You would have said it's not a deliberate foul, but it has gone off. So you could, but then can you change a decision from a goal kick to a corner via VAR? I don't know. But that, you know, anyway, that's quite getting into the minutiae. Yeah, quite. Or to the Pinken at archon.co.uk. Okay, so brilliant World Cup. Is that what we're saying? Just very finally, draw a line. Brilliant World Cup.
Absolutely, yeah. I really enjoyed it. My slight issue with that, it's painted Mr. Putin into a wonderful human being to some now, when that's just not the case. But, I mean, taking just the football, what a tournament. I've really, really enjoyed it. They're one of the best for a long time.
Overriding sight will be of him solely having an umbrella, though, so he didn't undid all that good work in the closing ceremony.
Yeah, there's been some brilliant moments, haven't there? Right from going back to the start with Ronaldo scoring that free kick against Spain, Akinfeev making the big save for Russia in the shootout against Spain. England, of course, winning a shootout. It still feels kind of bizarre. There's just been... And the goal of the tournament video that was played, was at half time yesterday. You just looked at that back and thought, wow, there's been some brilliant goals. Who won it? It was the Bell
Chadley.
For me, it was the French right back whose name is now
Pavard.
That's the one. Just the technique on that, and maybe the camera angle gives it a little bit of extra oomph. But I thought that was a sensational goal.
Take your pick. Thanks, World Cup. Right, we can have a summer now, boys. Brilliant. Off we go. Right, it's time for On the World Cup Sidelines, or part two of this podcast, where we're going to talk Norwich City. Of course, pre-season is in full swing, to the point where Norwich City are, of course, in Germany on their pre-season tour. So that makes things very exciting, and hopefully we're going to try now, don't laugh, Dave, and make contact with Paddy Davitt in Germany. Wish us luck. Paddy, it's Michael. You're in Germany and we've managed to connect via phone. This is exciting.
I can just about hear you, MB. You might shout, my friend.
That's good. Are you well? We're live on the podcast now. Please do not swear. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, boys. Yeah, currently on the A2, heading down to Dusseldorf to pick up World Cup photographer Paul Chesterton. Sun is shining. There's a lot of cars here, drive very fast. That's my first observation. Second observation... being no doubt, I'm not breaking any laws. We've got you on the hands free here, boys, so there's no need to report me to any authorities. But they do like to fly past.
Not for that, so, anyway.
I'm multitasking, yeah. So, all good. First game out of the way, obviously, yesterday afternoon. Quite an unusual affair, really. Game of two halves, as I tried to put to Daniel, and he wasn't going to disagree. But, we're up and running now, so next couple of games tomorrow, and... eye-catching games, really. You know, the 23s, Borussia's 23s. I'm sure there'll be some talent on show for the gold and black. And then Norwich's seniors later in the evening embark on game two, Union Berlin. So, yeah, it's all good, mate.
I can hear the excitement in your voice. I was getting a bit worried that you were on the A2 and you were in the wrong country. So at least that's all good.
Well, it's funny because my next, in about 25 kilometres, I need the A45. And this is a bit of a Midlands joke, but the A45 is literally next to my house in Coventry. So, to say it's... throwing me a little bit, it would be an understatement. But we're all good. I'm sure that listeners will be interested or not, but drove from Calais Saturday, went through five countries. Only place I had any issues was the M25. Make of that what you will. Closed, two junctions closed, took me into London, out of London, then down to Dover, down to Folkestone. Missed my scheduled channel tunnel, but thankfully managed to get out about 40 minutes later. But yeah, that says it all really, doesn't it? Five countries, not a problem this side of the water, but we don't need to get into a debate about Brexit, do we? We'll leave that one there.
No,
this is a football podcast. It's not the new European, is it?
Well, this is true. This is true. Give it 2 years and it'll be far, far worse. There you go. Yes, I've just made a Brexit joke. Oh, we've had a little look, obviously, with the Paderborn game. We'll get stuck into a couple of details of that. But in terms of the logistics of this week for you, what's it like? Give us an insight. Is it a nightmare? Is it enjoyable?
Oh.
We were doing so well. Poor old Paddy. It says it's reconnecting. Oh, Paddy?
Yeah, no, I think I was just saying, you asked me, was I enjoying it? Well, yeah, I mean, it's good to be out here in this setting, and it's a little bit more relaxed in terms of speaking to the boys who matter, but it's quite full on. People probably won't believe me, but as I say, just to recap, when you've spent 9 hours driving on Saturday, you kind of need about a day or two to recover, so I'm just kind of getting back into full working order, and, you know, the schedule's quite tough, I think, this time around. You know, yesterday, more or less, the games overlapped with the 23s and the seniors, so you've got to choose which one you're going to go to, and obviously you're going to go to the seniors, and then even tomorrow's games, the way it's panned out, we're probably not going to be able to see the full 90 minutes of the Dortmund and the 23s, because Norwich's seniors are playing Berlin about an hour away. It's going to be rush hour time, so we're probably going to have to bail out of there to get to the Union Berlin game. So yeah, it's quite challenging logistically. Obviously you're dealing with going into grounds that might not have the sort of setups we certainly have at Carrow Road in terms of connections and even PowerPoints. I've been to some of these tours where you are literally in a field. So, you know, it's kind of Eastern Counties level ground. So, yeah, it all goes in for the rich tapestry of what's involved. But, you know, ultimately we're out here to document City and what they're doing on the pitch, and it's not really about what happens around that. It's what we see on the pitch, and you know, yesterday, thankfully, certainly the second 45, it was quite encouraging. I'm sure you boys and anybody else who's listening will have seen the goals and two fine finishes from Mr. Pukki, I thought. So yeah, that's a positive, and that's what it's about now, isn't it? I mean, we've had the games in England with great respect to those sides. That was lower levels of opposition. That was really just glorified fitness runs. I think now, this week certainly, and then when they get back to the UK, building up to Birmingham, it's about, as Daniel said to me yesterday after the game, it's now imparting tactical information into them and the strategies that they're going to need to hopefully hit the ground running come Birmingham on August the 4th.
Spot on. And you've already mentioned Teemu Pukki, which is lovely, and I know he's headed the match report you've done in the press today. Is there anything else that caught your eye? And then I want to ask you about Remy as well, or you can talk about Remy now, but there's clearly I think some concern for those who did watch the match over his distribution and maybe those goals in the first half. And let's reiterate the fact that at the moment Remy Matthews is the guy who's basically got a real chance to prove he can be number one next season.
Funnily enough, I mean, just prior to sort of heading out, just wrote a piece for tomorrow and touched on exactly those points, Michael. Yeah, I think Remy isn't grasping his opportunity, and for me, it's fairly evident that Michael McGovern is still getting pretty much the same amount of game time. In an ideal world, Remy now would be established as the number one out of those two, and would be really laying down a marker. I think it's safe to say he would be disappointed with the second goal that he conceded. I thought that was something he could have got across to. I mean, he wasn't unsighted, you know. It was hit, but not massively, with a lot of venom from the edge of the box. And he just, it looked like he was a bit slow in getting down to it. That comes on the back of the goal that conceded at Lincoln. Okay, Sean Raggett was probably the chief instigator. But again, you know, if you're the keeper and the ball's passed back to you from a defender 40 yards out, you'd like to think you'd be able to get something in the way of it. So, and the key for me is, yeah, exactly, the distribution. I don't think he's a natural. He's certainly not in the Angus Gunn category with the ball at his feet, and he's going to need to be, because Daniel Farke's philosophy is quite clear. It's playing out from the back. Yes, he's had to be a little bit more pragmatic when you play in the Championship against sides who want to press you. But again, yesterday, Paderborn were very much of that ilk. You know, their front players were very keen to not give him any moment to dwell on the ball. And it looks, you know, when you watch him, you just think he's not overly confident with the ball at his feet, and that's a concern. I'm not sure, given he's now in his mid-20s, you know, I'm not sure whether that's a skill you can developed now to a level where, you know, Daniel Farke is happy for you to be his number one. I think all bets are off now. I think maybe at the start of the summer, Remy would have been the man in possession. He clearly impressed at Plymouth, but what I'm seeing so far in pre-season, I would imagine that is an area Norwich will be looking still at. I mean, they were obviously linked with the boy Henderson, Shrewsbury on loan keeper from Manchester United, who went to Sheffield United. Danny Ward links have been there most of the summer. I would think if you're Norwich's top brass, you're just keeping a weather eye. And obviously, if Remy isn't able to develop in the way he needs to, then I think that's an area they're going to have to look at. So, yeah, that's a long-winded way of saying, yeah, I'd agree entirely. I think Remy really isn't putting down the marker he needs to at this stage of the summer. He's still got time, of course. But, yeah, the clock is ticking. And in terms of your other question, what impressed me? I liked Louis Thompson again, if I'm honest. You know, Pookie did get the headlines quite rightly, but Thompson also came on. He made four changes at the interval. And Thompson just basically, where in the first half they got overrun, Leitner was isolated. McLean wasn't really in the game. Norwich's back line were very underprotected every time Paderborn powered through from sort of the thirds. Didn't happen in the second half, and a lot of that I think is down to Louis Thompson, and obviously Ben Godfrey came in alongside him. You know, they offered that protection and the platform for. We then started to see Hernandez, Pookie, Rhodes, Srebeni became more into the game, and it's obviously pertinent because given Daniel confirmed after the game that, you know, Alex Tete has contracted chickenpox, probably isn't going to make the kickoff. I think there is a vacancy now for that combative midfielder, because it's no point having a Leitner in the side if you can't give him the framework he needs to do what he can do with the ball. So yes, we all know that Louis coming back from 2 years really where he's not kicked a ball, you do have to be a little bit cautious with him. But again, following on from what we saw at Lincoln, he doesn't look like a guy who's off the pace to me. So I think that's an interesting one to watch now, bearing in mind obviously Tete probably isn't going to be available for Birmingham.
Paddy, it's Marky, mate. How you doing? All right?
Mate, I'm good, pal.
Yeah, not too bad. Mate, obviously, it was a really sloppy start from Norwich in the game yesterday. How tired do you sense the players are for sort of all the pre-season training? I know that Farke likes to work him pretty hard, doesn't he?
Yeah, he did. And apparently Saturday, their first full day at their training base, he did beast them. I think there were two very heavy sessions, by all accounts, and yeah, I think that clearly is a factor. You know, much was made of it maybe last season when he first came in, how tough some of those lads were finding it, you know, the double, the triple sessions, and the pre-season probably more so, because that's really when you have to get your core work in and get your base fitness. So I would think that is a major factor. Yeah, I think the reality is as well, the heat, you know, that can't underestimate that. Yesterday it was, you know, it's 30 degrees at kickoff, I think, and you can really feel that heat in the stadium. So I think they're all factors, but ultimately, yeah, the reality is it's a tough kind of balancing act, isn't it, almost, at this time of the season where you're trying to get the base fitness work in while also trying to, you know, perform and ultimately win games, albeit, as Farke keeps saying, he's right, it isn't about results at this stage. It is about seeing things that you think, okay, yeah, Pookie and Rhodes, you can just see the semblance of a little relationship they're building. And also maybe McLean and Leitner. I like them too at Lincoln. So, yeah, it's no doubt that the work they're doing on the training pitch is impacting at the minute, I think, in terms of the cohesion.
Hello, mate. It's Dave. Just one from me as well. Dennis Srebeni. At Lincoln, we were all sort of saying he needed a goal, needed a bit of confidence, and you've seen him score twice in the last two games now with a couple of nice finishes. You think he's starting to make some progress?
He certainly is, Dave. Yeah. You know, two goals in two now, and very similar finishes in terms of kind of just checking out, buying himself a yard of space, and just whipping balls into the far corner on his left foot. So, yeah, and I did actually put that to Farke yesterday. You know, as much as inevitably a lot's being made of Nelson not being out here and Rhodes coming in, let's not forget, you know, Srebeni really, this is his first full season. I think that period from January when he came in with Onel to now, really, that was really just acclimatising, learning about the English game, the physicality, the demands on you, and I think now is when we will be able to judge him. Now's when we will be able to see if he's really going to be able to step up and, you know, grab a leading role, or if he's still going to be a bit part player. You would think inevitably that given they brought in Pookie, given they brought in Rhodes, that sort of pushes him down the pecking order. But you know, he can only do what he's doing, which is every time he gets a chance, looking threatening and getting on the score sheet. And I think it was noticeable, I thought yesterday particularly, that first half he's playing up top on his own, looked very isolated. As soon as the second half started, he had Pukki in and around him.
I reckon he's hit a tunnel.
I like WhatsApp because it's
the line on his own. But the reality is, like we've just discussed with Remy, he needs to take every opportunity he can, because he might find competitions quite hot for places, I think, when the real stuff starts.
Spot on, Paddy. Top work, mate. So we've got Union Berlin on Tuesday, and then it's Wolfsburg on Thursday. Everyone can follow Paddy and all his insight and analysis at pinken.com, of course. More importantly, Pad, I've got one job for you. Can you make sure Paul Chesterton saves me one of those pineapple bounties? Because I did put a request in for one.
Okay, yeah, I did see something on social. Yeah, how many has he brought, do we know?
Not enough. That's what I'm worried about. Not enough.
Okay, well, a bit like Dennis Trebeni, boys, you might have to get in the pecking order, i.e. after me.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. Paul said you're not allowed to eat them all, so that's your task. You've got to bring me one back.
Okay. Yeah. He might be having to find his own way back from Dusseldorf Airport, if that's the case.
Oh, God, I'm not going to get one, am I? Brilliant stuff, Pad, as always. I don't know when we'll next speak to you. It might well be when you're back here in Blighty, but have a great rest of the trip and,
cheers,
enjoy it.
Yeah, no worries. Take it easy, yeah?
Cheers, Pad. Well, I think that worked. That worked, didn't it, Dave?
Just about. I don't know about pineapple bounties, though. That sounds disgusting.
Oh, what are you talking about?
The best things I saw at the World Cup was someone with three lions, the three lion bars on their shirt. Actually, three chocolate bars. That was absolutely superb.
Pina colada, apparently. Like a pina colada chocolate bar.
Oh, that might explain it. I'm not a cocktail man, Michael, I'm afraid.
Give you your ale. What were you throwing over your head when you were watching the football?
Oh, anything I could find. Just picking up other people's beers, chucking them around, you know. I just go a bit crazy at these World Cup games.
Good old Pad. So, yeah, as I said, you can follow all of Paddy's insight, reaction and analysis, which is what we'll all be doing as well, over at pinken.com throughout the tour. We didn't get to talk about Thiefgate, which is, of course, the fact that the players have had some money nicked from their hotel room, which is never great, let's be honest. So I'm sure you can read up about that at the website. Initiation songs, did you take in some of those? They were all over the place on social media.
What did Pukki do? I
couldn't work out if there's a lot of swearing in it.
Yeah, I think there was, wasn't there?
This reminds me of being at Sinsel Bank and all of a sudden this hot take hip-hop lots of swearing track appeared at half time over the
song,
PA.
It was a Drake song.
Well, good knowledge, Dave.
Yeah, and then I only recognised his voice. I didn't recognise the song, but there was a lot of swearing, wasn't
there? There was a lot of words that wouldn't be appearing on Radio 1.
I think somebody soon had a word in their ear to say, turn that off. Similarly, the England game, the semi final last week, me and Paddy were at Open. After the game, the DJ played Three Lions. And honestly, the whole room turned and groaned like, what are you doing?
Bubble burst. Recount. So there we go. As we said, it's Union Berlin tomorrow and Wolfsburg on Thursday. We'll have live coverage of both games over at pinken.com. And then we're back in England and we'll come up with that in a moment. So we normally talk mailbag at this point, and this will be where you can get in touch with us. Remember, the email is thepinken@archant.co.uk, or you can get in contact with us on all forms of social media. We will therefore lead the discussion via your tweets, emails, comments and questions, so make sure you get them in.
What do we all think of Nelson then, with the fact that he's not out there, and what do you guys think of that?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, Daniel or any football manager can't really come out and say yes, I don't want Nelson Oliveira, because that's going to damage the price, isn't it? So he's danced around the true fact of the matter, which is Nelson Oliveira, as things stand, isn't going to be playing at Birmingham on the opening day of the season. Otherwise, he would be out on that training camp in Germany, as far as I'm concerned.
So there was a really interesting line from Daniel, who said that we can only take so many people. We want to give these strikers a go, and we want to get the group really tight. That was sort of the words here. And to me, that's like, it wouldn't be as tight if Nelson was here. And I think we saw all the issues we had, of course, last season. The interesting thing with Nelson is he's obviously got a value that Norwich will want to recoup, and they need someone to sell him to if they're going to sell him. It's a shame, because he just, I don't know, I love being optimistic about these things. But if they all came back together in England, and you could really have Nelson as an option alongside Jordan, and you've got a really good basis for a front line there. But I don't know whether Nelson's in the position where he wants that, whether they're relationships that are just simply broken and can't be fixed, and you know, reality is it probably is a future that lies elsewhere.
I don't think they would have brought in Rhodes, would they? I get the sense if Oliveira was really in their plans. Yeah, it's a shame with Oliveira, isn't it? It's because, let's face it, a fully failing Oliveira is still the best striker on the books, isn't he?
I don't know if he is now with Rhodes, but...
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, but at least they have got a replacement in. My fear is now for City is that he blotted his copybook so much last season. I mean, this time last season, he'd been linked with Swansea for 12 million. I mean, be lucky to get a quarter of that now, wouldn't you? I can just see another loan deal coming.
Well, I saw the Sun... journalist Alan Nixon mentioned between £2 and £4 million was what Norwich were looking for. I mean, that would be, I mean, the Norwich paid £5 million for him, so that would immediately be a loss. The thing with Nelson is, if he's on, you know, £1.5 million quid a year, some would say, that's a lot of money, and you know, you could probably take the saving and a loan fee if you could get that, much like Sheffield Wednesday have tried to do with Jordan.
I think Stuart Webber would take £2 to £4 million as things stand, just in terms of the harmony of the group, really. You want, if Nelson's not involved, you don't want him hanging around the place. We'll probably never know the truth, but you see, Russell Martin is with the under-23s, and being the good character that we know he is, he's willing to... I guess he'll be Matt Gill's assistant, essentially, won't he? He'll be that sort of inspirational person to have amongst the group, and he'll be a good role model for those young lads, and he'll probably give it his all and train as hard as he always does. But he will be doing that in the hope that, I guess, from the club's point of view and his, that he can earn himself a loan deal somewhere, like he went to Rangers last year. But did they say to Nelson, will you train with the under-23s in Germany? Did he say no? Or did they just not think that he would be a positive influence in the way that Russ would be to those young lads? So that probably says a lot as well. But we'll never know the truth.
How long has Nelson got left on his contract?
So Nelson's got 2 years, I think. I think he's a year after the other ones. And he is on a really hefty salary, which is why if they did sell him for 4 million quid or 3-4, you're still also selling that one, saving that 1.5 million quid a year in wages. So there's definitely a motivation, even if maybe the fee isn't there. I find the Russ thing really sad because... I'm sure he wants to play football, but there's so much I still think he could bring to the group, even if he wasn't playing. He probably doesn't. He wants to play, clearly. But that's a shame. But it is what it is.
I think, unfortunately, the relationship, in footballing terms, not in personal terms, has just become a bit too toxic, isn't it? You know,
that's what Daniel would say.
If Russ was named in central defence now, I just think, imagine what the reaction would be like online. They'd say, oh no, what's Russell Martin doing playing? I just think, you know, all the years of good service, largely at right back, have kind of been forgotten about now, and they feel like ancient history. And I just don't feel that people would stick with Russ, and just, you know, one mistake and he'd be, you know, ground zero again, wouldn't he?
I think he became too senior, didn't he, within the squad, and that's not Russell's fault, and that's not Farker's fault either, because a lot of that was done before Farker came in. He became such a go-to person for a lot of the squad, I think, and any problems that the players might have, you know, little problems that, you know, crop up with any workplace, they'd go to Russ, I think, is the impression I get. And Farker's got to establish his authority on, he's only had a year to do that, and he can't have anyone undermining that, and Martin might do that, not through his own fault, but just through the seniority that he's had within that squad anyway.
I think that's a fantastic point and well put. We'll see how it all manoeuvres over the remainder of the transfer window. So we'd normally do the week ahead here, but as we know, Norwich are on tour. We've just spoken to Paddy about that. A couple of other points. We've got Luton and Charlton after that. Dave, looking forward to those?
Yeah, two League One teams, so that'll be decent tests. Norwich went to Charlton last pre-season and won 2-0, I think, off the top of my head. Yannick Wilds got Stephen Naismith, and a young lad called James Madison was looking rather good in pre-season at that point. Spoke to him after the game, seemed to remember, and thought, this guy's got something about him, hasn't he?
did sort of show that he might have something about him. So that'll be what we're saying there, that it'll be a different level of test after the pre-season tour, and I think you start to gauge, they start to hit their straps really at that point in pre-season before kick-off against August, which, as we know, is Saturday, August the 4th. Thanks, Dave. Yeah. Kit launches. Norwich's away kit's out. Mark, white little number with a yellow and green stripe. Like it?
Yeah, I quite like that. Yeah, I'd say it looks a little bit more like a training top to me, but I like it. And I'm not the sort of person that goes around the city wearing a kit, but if I had to, I wouldn't mind.
I like it much more than the home kit.
Oh, on the other way. Ah, there we go. No, that wasn't set up either. I much prefer the home kit. I think the away kit's okay, but I don't get why the yellow and green stripes don't continue round the shoulder. I think that just looks a bit cheap to me. It gets to the shoulder and then it stops.
What, do you think they run out of money?
It
couldn't go that far.
I think it looks a bit cheap, yeah. I think it should have continued all the way round, but there we go.
Design insight from there, Mr. Freezer. We've got a third kit on the way.
I just can't wait. What colour is it going to be? What style?
How many times are they going to wear it?
Yeah. Well, what did we have last year? That purple one.
Well, yeah. At least this time, the away kit and third kit are going to be different colours, which seem to be slightly... I know they were slightly issue, but they couldn't really wear the away kit last year because all the teams in yellow also had black. So you couldn't wear a grey-black kit, really.
It's a fair point. But that purple one, they wore at that game at Burton, which I don't want to relive. The 4-3 at Hull when Mr. Robinson endeared himself so much. And the only positive one I can remember was Wolves, wasn't it, when John Ruddy very kindly spilled Nelson Oliveira's 40-yard shot for a 2-2 draw.
What colour do you want the third kit to be?
Multicoloured, you know, like, you know, rainbow coloured, maybe with some sort of, I don't know, something weird, something strange like you see in Europe where you get like sort of cash on like the print or some food in the print, you know, just really make a big statement, something really stupid.
I'm glad you're not designing it. It could be pride kit though. That'd be good.
Pride kit, that would be quite a nice statement.
Yeah,
that.
Pink, yeah, like Scotland away kit. Yeah, why not?
Salmon.
Yeah.
Let's get salmon. Hopefully they'll all rise like one to clear the ball. Well, we'll find out soon enough. I don't know exactly when, but wouldn't surprise me if they play in it while they're away in Germany, if not when they're back. The only last point, transfer speculation. I mean, I think most of their business is done now. We've already spoken to Paddy. Goalkeeper is probably a live issue for the remainder of the window and a winger, but Harry Wilson does look like he's not going to be coming to Norwich.
Looks like it. John Percy from The Telegraph today saying that Stoke have made a fresh loan move, but Derby are in the box seat because Lampard had talks with Wilson. Whether Norwich ever could have, you know, muscled in financially on that deal, because I would imagine there's a fair loan fee involved with that, we'll probably never know. But Stoke clearly have got a lot of money before you even worry about parachute payments. And Jurgen Klopp has now said that Wilson is, or as good as said, that he is on his way out on loan because he didn't play him on Saturday.
I mean, it feels like it's probably slightly too high profile for the sort of loan signing that Norwich would make, because don't forget Reed and Gunn were fairly low down in terms of their loan signings, and also the game time he'd get. Even if he excelled, you wonder if there's quite a lot of competition still, even though Norwich want a winger. There may be too much of that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think, let's be honest, the Norwich need to get a few players out the door now, don't they, before they do any more significant business. I think they've got a very heavy squad, and I think this is where Stuart Webber needs to sort of earn his crust, really. With you know, he's got players that are going to be difficult to move on, like your Oliveira's, Wiltshire, Nathan is gone. Thank goodness for him and the club. That he needs to get them off the books, and so then that money can be diverted elsewhere.
That's the hard thing if no one wants them. That's literally, we can talk here about all the players Norwich want to get off the books. If no one wants to buy them, never mind how much they're actually offering.
He knew what he was signing up for, though.
He did. And he's not done too badly as we view it now, bearing in mind no one's played any real games yet. I'm always very conscious of pre-season. We'll see how we go when the real stuff starts. Any other business? Nah, there's not any. We've done everything, haven't we, Dave?
Well, I was just going to say about Wilskill. We mentioned him
I've
there.
I've decided the joke's now going to be, I don't think there is any, but you've always got something to say.
I've always got something else. yeah, Yannick, that's an interesting one. He's playing a bit. I wonder if that's a little bit of putting him in the transfer window to an extent, but I've not been especially impressed by what I've seen from him so far. But we keep talking about the new options in wide areas, but Ernel Hernandez seems to be doing very well in pre-season so far. Few assists already.
Yeah, Yannick's just hit and miss, isn't he? That's the thing. But he's a good lad, so I don't think they've got
mainly miss.
But you know, we've got the win at Sheffield United thanks to Yannick. So, all happens. Right, brilliant. Okay, we're done. Thanks everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Paddy from Germany. That worked. I thought that was good. We'll do that again at some point. And thank you to Dave. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Cheers, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Remember pinken.com for all the latest Norwich City news, pre-season coverage, analysis, opinion and transfer insight. All being well, we'll be back for another edition soon, and then every Monday when one way or another the domestic season has hit its stride. Hopefully that's the plan and we'll manage it. Remember to get in touch with your questions and comments, and until our return, here's to a safe and speedy pre-season schedule. Bye-bye.